Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. So if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us what your name is, where you live, and what you do for a living.
Yes, I'm Melker Svord. I live in Sweden, on the west coast of Sweden, in Gothenburg, and I run a footwear company called Wide Footwear.
Awesome. So can you tell us more about Wide Footwear, what exactly it's all about, and how you got the idea for it?
Yeah, so we had this idea that we wanted to change the footwear industry from the bottom up, and really over the next decades make a significant change in how people view and perceive footwear. I really got the idea from, I met a world-renowned foot expert 3 years ago, and I had a meeting with him, a consultation, and when he couldn't recommend me the best shoe on the market, we pretty much said, okay, we gotta make one ourselves. So we put our heads together, and early on, we said it would be nice one day if that same foot expert would actually like our shoe that we produced. And then, 2 years later, he said that it was the best shoe he's ever seen. So that was definitely a nice, sweet moment for us.
Awesome. So that's really cool. So you met with the foot expert. He couldn't recommend the right shoe. And you guys said, okay, let's create this company, find the perfect shoe. So what did that look like? I'm sure it was lots of trial and error, finding the right materials, building it. So what was that process like for you?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, this was during COVID. So there was a lot of challenges that maybe you don't have in normal times. There was no travel, so we couldn't go and see suppliers. We couldn't see manufacturers. Everything had to be done over, like we're talking right now, over Zoom. So there's a bunch of, I'm kind of happy in hindsight that I was a little naive how hard it is to make a shoe. I didn't know anything about it. So we just dove in head first, which is, I think it's a good quality sometimes to just go for it. And then you deal with the obstacles later. But I mean, there was hundreds of headaches along the way, you know, to get the right composition of all the materials, to get the right density in the soles is a whole science of itself. For it to work the way we wanted to. And then, of course, like many setbacks in terms of like materials and delays and not working like we wanted to, things falling apart. So it took 2 years from starting development to finished product. So it's like that type of tenacity that I think you need to follow through on such a big task.
For sure. So can you just talk more about your shoes? Are they more so like workout shoes or casual shoes? Like what types of occasion would people be wearing the shoes?
So typically our shoes, people wear them casually. Like we like to, like the current model that we have, we like to say that it's like a shoe that people can wear 70% of their time. Maybe not to the gala dinner or going out for the running on the trail for now. But, you know, walking, going to the store, at the office, you know, you can do it, use it anytime. And we are unwillingly placed in the category of called barefoot shoes. We don't call ourselves barefoot shoes, but we call ourselves functional footwear. And I mean, the whole idea of our shoe is to really respect the perfect anatomy of a foot and the body. So we do a lot of basically, the shoe doesn't restrict your foot in any way. You know, you can, your toes can be spread as they're meant to, your foot can bend as it's meant to at the big toe joint, and just a bunch of features that are non-restrictive.
Awesome. So as of right now, where can people find your shoes? Are you mostly selling them on your website? Are they in stores? Like, what's the best place? Or even like, for example, like I'm in America, like, and you know, there you sell them here in the States. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So in the beginning, we were selling worldwide, and then we had to pause worldwide shipping for a bit because we were getting crushed on the shipping. It was very expensive to send from our central warehouse here in Sweden to the US. It cost us like $57 or something for one pair of shoes, which is unsustainable. But now we have found a way to do it. So we're actually next week, we're going to relaunch worldwide shipping. So that's fun. And it's, you know, through our website, widefootwear.com, wide with a Y, not with an I. Yeah, I mean, we've been really happy with the feedback so far. It's been one hell of a ride.
Awesome. So in terms of shipping it from the US, like, what does that look like? So is it more so like you have distributors that are local that you're shipping from here? Or like, how are you able to kind of bring that cost out and make it make sense for you to ship to American customers from Europe?
Yeah, so it really comes down to negotiating a good deal with the shipping companies. And to do it, so for example, in the beginning, we did UPS, like two to three day shipping. That was super expensive. And then there are worse options where you can send it and it'll take like 2-3 weeks, no tracking. And we didn't want that either. So now we've found like a sweet spot where it's not cheap, but it's, you know, we have tracking, but it takes 5 to 7 days instead. And I think that's something that the customers will appreciate, that it's, you know, they don't have to pay a lot for shipping, but also so that we can get it there in a timely manner. So for now, we're selling everything through our own website and from our central warehouse, a couple hours away from where I'm sitting right now.
Do you think in the future, as you guys scale, that you'll have a warehouse here in the States?
100%. We're actually looking at doing it already, but I think it's going to have to wait for a year or so, because it's like, it's a lot of different things to take into consideration, because if you start importing mass scale products into the US, there's a whole other cost and logistics to that. With, you probably need to have an American company, and you know, it's difficult. So for now, we're keeping it here. Maybe in the future, and I think in the future we'll have warehouses in Japan and Thailand as well.
Awesome. So I guess right now, obviously, you mentioned that you're in Europe, but where are most of your customers located?
Yeah, all over Europe. For now, it's kind of split. I mean, our home market, Sweden, is probably the biggest one. But yeah, tons of customers in Germany, France, Spain, Portugal, Italy. Czech Republic is quite big for us as well. Norway. Yeah. I mean, it's all over Europe pretty much.
So I guess like locally, have your shoes made it to stores? Is that your plan? Like, are you planning on going into retail? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I've been working a lot with retail in my previous startup, and I want to keep it in our e-commerce store for now. And I think strategically, it's smarter to wait a little bit, because with a lot of retailers, you only get one chance. I mean, I can do the best job ever to sell it into the stores and get it on the shelf, but if it doesn't sell through, if it's not well known enough in the beginning, then that retailer can quite quickly turn on you and be like, we're not giving this a chance for the next 5 years. So sometimes it's better to build more brand awareness first and not rush into retail. And then when we do get into retail, we're sure that it sells through and that we can build it sustainably from there. It's like playing chess, right? I mean, you have to think like 3 moves away all the time.
It's an interesting mindset, because I feel like many people that we've talked to tend to have kind of like the opposite mindset. They feel like getting into retail quickly, ASAP. And I'm not sure if it's different maybe in Europe compared to the States, but like, they really feel that they need to get in there as soon as possible, and that retail is going to help them with brand awareness, not brand awareness first and then retail.
Yeah, it of course depends on the product as well. I mean, if you have like a low cost product that you can't ship sustainably and has to be in like gas stations, then sure. I mean, but I think, at least in my previous experience, I've made that mistake, and I've gone into retail too quickly. And then it's a good example. Like, I got into one of the biggest retailers in Japan, and it didn't sell well. And then that retailer literally said, okay, we are not going to give you another chance until 2023, which is earlier this year. And of course, I'm not in the company anymore. But, and then sidetracked to that, we waited for some time to get into a store in the UK, one of the big retailers there. And we focused on building the brands through a lot of influencers, a lot of, you know, paid ads and other types of events and campaigns. And then when we got in there, customers were like already asking for us, you know, and they were like, okay, where's that brand? I've seen it all over online. I've seen it everywhere. So then we're building momentum with that retailer. And so in the end, we actually saved time by waiting, if that makes sense, right? So by 2023, which is this year, we're actually doing very, I mean, my previous company, we're doing very well in that retailer, but the Japanese one, we have to start from scratch. So it's, I understand the other mindset too, but yeah, it's a balance. You have to think very, very hard about it for sure.
Yeah, I wonder too if it's a cultural difference. You know, like in Japan, the business culture is much more cutthroat and intense, I think, than the U.S. I mean, I'm not saying that we're not intense, but I think that there's kind of a different level of expectations. Like, I can't see a U.S. retailer cutting somebody off for 5 years if they don't sell the products well.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of competition of shelf space. You know, it's
yeah, for sure.
You know, it's money for the retailer, and sometimes it's easier for them to say like, okay, we can give it a new chance, but it's going to have to be several years away to kind of reset the market and to have a fresh start when we do, because we can't have another failed launch, and that's going to cost us a lot of money, which, you know, frankly, on this shelf space, we could have sold another brand that actually sells through. So I think, I mean, I've heard similar things happen in the US, but maybe not as cutthroat as Japan. Japan are very, very meticulous with the details.
100%. 100%. So, yeah, like you mentioned, right now, your main focus is sort of, one of your main focuses is brand awareness. So what are you doing right now to get more of that? Like, are you running lots of ad campaigns, social media marketing? How are you getting the word out about your brand?
Yes, it's a lot of things. I mean, yeah. Of course, social ads, paid ads is a big part of it to get a lot of eyeballs on the brand. I do sincerely believe that a customer needs to see the brand like at least 7 to 11 times before they purchase, and that's part of the process. And then we use influencers that we believe in our category to really speak from the heart about the brand. And then we have, I mean, of course, like we believe in working to have customers do word of mouth. So if we get the first initial 500,000 customers or whatever to really like the product, they're going to talk about it. And that's what we're seeing the results of now, with, you know, incredible customer service, focus on the customers that we did have in the beginning and really nurture them, you know, respond very, very personally, addressing them by name. And, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. And I think sometimes we get, not us, but in general, we get like caught up in trying to reach as many customers as possible. But sometimes it's about nurturing the ones that you have and play the long game, because without the happy initial customers, you're not going to get new ones. So it's something that we focus a lot about.
100%. And I think especially when it comes to things like shoes, word of mouth is huge, right? You sell it to one person, huge. They love your product, they tell a friend, and the next thing you know, you have the whole family wearing your shoes.
Exactly. And the thing with shoes is that, like, for example, if you're selling a couch, right? I mean, everybody has, you have one couch, pretty much, at least like 95% of people have one couch. But if you sell shoes, everybody has like 10 pairs of shoes, right? So there's always room to get more shoes. People love to buy shoes. So it's not like one of these products where you have to convince everyone at the beginning, but the word of mouth, it's actually quite powerful. But because everybody's like, I need one of those. It's not a huge purchasing decision. So a lot of people will give it a chance to try.
Awesome. So in terms of working with influencers, can you talk more about what that looks like? Like, do you send them like the product for free and say, hey, try it out. If you like it, then you can promote it. Like, what does that process look like, and how do you actually find the right ones?
Yeah, so I think for us, we're very interested in the topic. So we've been following it for years. So naturally, we've been following people that we think are good in this industry. So I think knowing who the right people are just comes from a genuine interest in the industry and interest for, okay, who are the top speakers of this topic, you know. So I personally follow all of them, and you know, we have built relationships with a bunch of them. And yeah, we send them shoes to try, and then I always give them an opportunity to join our affiliate program. So then that they if they want to share the product, they can also make money from it, which is something a lot of people like. So it's I'm more in this early stage, at least. We send products to ask for reviews, pretty much, and ask for reviews and feedback. And if they like the product, they usually post about it. Some people don't, but that's like part of the process. So yeah.
That's cool. So what would you say the role of technology is when it comes to your business?
Well, I mean, it's huge. Without technology, everything would crumble in a matter of minutes. I mean, we have a bunch of systems that needs to work together, so that people can come onto our website, and then, you know, the order can process, and then that can be sent to our warehouse, and then they can send it out. So yeah, technology is crucial to us all the time.
So obviously now is the age of AI. So what does AI look like for your business?
We don't use it very much. We only use it for some customer service stuff with like automated replies in some instances where it's applicable. If someone has like a super quick, easy question that we can respond to. But yeah, and in terms of like, other than that, I mean, copywriting, we use it sometimes for help to like finalize things. Brainstorming, it's quite good for. I mean, for example, I love brainstorming with ChatGPT when I don't have anyone else to talk to during the day. It's like having an assistant, right? To think about campaigns and ideas. Like, I have this idea. What do you think about that? Can you help me expand on it? And stuff like that. So I think those are the main places where we use AI today.
So do you think like AI is a place, for example, you mentioned answering easy questions, but what about more complex things like product recommendations or, you know, giving people more information, upselling them? Because obviously you're not just selling shoes, you're selling accessories and saying, hey, you bought the shoes, buy this accessory, you should get this too. Like, do you see these types of use cases for your business?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, today we have a lot of that like manually set up, right? Because I mean, we learn patterns. For example, like you said, okay, someone buys only an accessory. Okay, in 30 days, you'll get an email trying to recommend you one of our other products. I mean, that's like manually set up. But I do envision a future where this is very automated with AI and very personally tailored to all our customers, which would be awesome. Better for them too.
No, 100%. Yeah, if you can get AI to be personalized and make it feel authentic, that's a huge win for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be at a stage where it's very authentic though, because if it's not, I think it can backfire quite a lot.
Yeah, definitely. So what would you say is the biggest challenge you're facing right now in the business?
I think the hardest thing, which probably many product companies will answer, is managing inventory and logistics. This is a constant challenge to be able to calculate in advance what's going to sell, what's not going to sell, how fast is it going to sell, like, and you know, like, can we start selling in 1 week before we have to place a new order, and what does that look like with lead times, and then how do we get it sustainably here, how do we get it sustainably to the customer? These are questions that are incredibly difficult to nail down, but I think with time we'll probably learn until we get new issues. So yeah, that's I would for sure, that's the biggest challenge right now. For example, like we have this black model for women that's been sold out for 2 weeks. We can't get more until November. It's just impossible. So we'll have a refill in November, and it's a good problem to have more demand than you have supply. Of course, it would be suck to have it the other way around, but dealing with, you know, hundreds of questions from people, when is the black back? When is it, why is it not in stock? So a lot of stuff like that.
Makes sense. So in terms of, you know, obviously now, you know, Q4 is coming up. So what you say is your top priority going into Q4 and finishing out this year?
Yeah, just finished the year strong. We have some interesting products coming probably in December or January. So a lot of focus on that. and just keep building relations with customers, getting a lot of feedback, because we have our first model, but we also want to release a 2.0 of that one. So it's we're collecting a lot of feedback from customers, what they want to see improved, and then trying to actually realize that as well, which is sometimes difficult, but we do our best.
Yeah, feedback is very important. So you mentioned that you've been an entrepreneur for some time. So what would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started your entrepreneurship journey?
Be more fearless, I think. Even though I've been quite fearless in my journey, I do think even more could have been better. It's I always come back to when things are crumbling, okay, but like, what's the worst thing that can happen? It's usually not that bad. The opposite is often a lot worse not to try that idea in my head. So things can crumble at any time, but I mean, I'm in for the ride. And I think being naive is probably smart too, in a way, because if people knew how hard it is to run a company or how difficult it can be to create a product or build a team or, you know, build a software as a service company. I mean, it's difficult things. And if it was easy, everybody would do it. So, but I always come back to the, you know, well, what's the alternative? There is no alternative. The alternative would be to not be happy with what I do. And that would be even worse than all the challenges I run through daily. So yeah, be fearless, be naive, and just go for it. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, for me, a question I was asked myself is like, you know, in 40, 50 years from now, if I'm having, it's like, I'm going to be living my life in regret if I don't go for these ideas. So you have to go for it 100%.
Right. You have to. There's literally no other alternative if you want to be fulfilled and if you want to achieve something. I always say, like, struggle is guaranteed, success is not, because everybody who succeeds does struggle. Like, it's impossible to get away from it. But I'm always very inspired by, I read this book by Ray Dalio, and he was saying how whenever he feels annoyed, like, don't quote me exactly on the words, but this is what I took away from it. He said, like, whenever he gets annoyed with an issue or something that feels too hard to solve, he will try to shift his mind and actually be excited about it. Like, oh, like, now I have this thing to solve, like, try to embrace it. And something that I try to use almost every day, because it's needed when you run into issues. So
true. So if we're going to have this conversation again in 1 year from now, where do you expect things to go for Wide Footwear?
Funny question. In a year from now, we will have not one product, but we'll have at least four different shoes. So a sneaker, a running shoe, and a winter boot, and a 2.0 of our current model. And we will have 4 or 5x our revenue for this year, and we will be shipping worldwide, and we will be probably 3 to 4 more people in the team, I would think. That's probably somewhere there.
Awesome. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing, like, your website or just social media handles, best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah, I mean, to get in touch with me is probably easiest through Instagram or Twitter. It's just Belkersford, my name. And then if you want to check out Wide, it's, of course, just widefootwear.com. Again, Wide with a Y. And I'm always game to talk business and answer questions about our shoes. So shoot me a message if anyone wants to, anytime.
Awesome. Well, Melker, thank you so much for your time. We're rooting for you. Hopefully you can chat again in 1 year from now as your company keeps growing.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. Bye.